For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free weekly email newsletter. Greetings to our more than 11,000 new subscribers in the last 6 weeks, and a thank you to all the viewers in London, Ontario, which is number 42 on our all-time video view list. 42, you cry? Whereas we start off by crying, what's with the climate kafirs? Climate alarmists have shown signs in recent years of an increasing interest in violent social confrontation, and now we see Greta Thunberg, wrapped in a trendy kafir, join a mob besieging an Israeli-Russian singer in Malmo, Sweden, to try to prevent her from performing in the Eurovision competition. So, this climate Jeanne d'Arc is not merely advocating, she's engaging in violent intimidation on behalf of anti-Semitism. Can somebody that she trusts not tell her that fame is a dangerous drug and that anti-Semitism is poison? And what becomes of her climate alarmist followers if they don't disassociate themselves from this odious and puzzling radicalism? Is the movement as a whole not uncomfortable with this sudden detour? And worse, what if they don't consider it a detour at all, but a destination, because a surprising number of them seem to have arrived there together without prior coordination? Obviously not everyone who worries about man-made climate change is even left-wing, let alone a left-wing radical, to say nothing of an anti-Semitic nut. But there is a puzzling tendency for those superficially unrelated belief systems to keep company, from Australia, to the US, to Sweden, and beyond. For instance, here in Canada, tiresome but apparently perpetual Green leader Elizabeth May put on a Palestinian flag scarf back in 2022 and said, quote, I take my marching orders from the permanent representative of Palestine to Canada, end quote, and that was at an event that featured a prominent Holocaust denier and a guy who'd called for, quote, a German superhero named Auschwitz, end quote. It really is weird. Why does Reuters' Sustainable Switch have a recurring tendency to discuss the situation in Gaza at all, let alone in tendentious ways? When everyone thinks of it, the conflict there seems to have nothing to do with the supposed energy transition. Yet they can't stop talking about it, and from a pro-Hamas perspective. Is there something about climate alarmism that keeps natural company with far-left causes? Because, okay, if you think that it's all about the revolution, that once we overthrow capitalism, patriarchy, and liberal democracy, all good things will flourish, and until we do so, nothing good can happen, you're certainly free to say so. But we're free to believe you if you do say it, we're free to believe you mean it, and we're free to lump you in with all the other tyrants and dictators who thought likewise throughout history. For instance, when someone says, quote, as a Latina vegan, I'm decolonizing a cruel and racist food system, end quote, you can bet not only that they're a dreary scold and probably visibly unhappy, but also that they believe a man-made climate crisis is among our most serious public policy problems and that they hate Israel and its Jewish inhabitants. And you can bet they do strange things to language and believe weird pseudo-histories. And speaking of weird pseudo-histories, for years, the Canadian Liberal administration under Justin Trudeau have been touting their carbon tax as the best thing since sliced bread, or possibly since bread itself. Efficient, effective, and popular. Now it isn't. It isn't popular, the public hates it, and it was never efficient because economists who favor carbon taxes want them to be a substitute for a hoorah's nest of regulations, and our carbon tax was an addition to the nest, not a replacement for it. And now comes the sad news. Har har har, that it and its red tape buddies didn't even work. Despite economically devastating and sanctimonious COVID lockdowns, Canadian greenhouse gas emissions rose from an estimated 686 million tons in 2020 to 698 million in 2021, and then 708 million in 2022, the latest year for which the federal authorities have numbers. So again, please, don't do us any more favors. And please, get a grip. Instead, in her ongoing retreat from reality, Trudeau's deputy prime minister and also finance minister, once a public intellectual world famous in Canada, now makes fantasy claims like, quote, the investments that Canada is attracting today are coming to Canada in large part because foreign investors recognize that we have a price on pollution and we have a strong climate plan, and that means they want to be here and make stuff here in Canada and create good jobs here in Canada, end quote. The fact is that foreign investment is fleeing from Canada to the point that we have to offer multi-billion dollar bribes to people to set up factories, and we have a productivity crisis because of their terrible policies. And yet, she and her colleagues go around saying stuff like, quote, "The federal government has developed an ambitious climate plan that is driving real results," end quote. Real results like falling productivity, stagnant real wages outside the public sector, and what's this? Rising emissions? Okay, those results are real, all right. They're just not the ones you were looking for, or that you could recognize when they arrived, or that anybody else would want. In the newsletter, we also note that Canary Media had just asked, quote, "Can corn ethanol really help decarbonize U.S. air travel?" end quote. And we replied tartly, "No, of course not. Using energy to grow corn and then expecting to turn it back into even more energy violates the second law of thermodynamics. And not everyone is willing to fudge the math and tell policymakers what they want to hear about it." We also remind viewers that being a climate alarmist means you can say anything and no one will call you out. For instance, from CBS News, quote, "Summer heat hits Asia early, killing dozens, as one expert calls it the most extreme event in climate history. Thousands of records are being brutalized all over Asia, which is by far the most extreme event in world climatic history," weather historian Maximiliano Herrera said in a social media post last week, end quote. Oh, really? Nothing in Earth's history was more extreme than a recent hot spell in Asia that you didn't even hear about? Well, here I'm going to quote Cody Cassidy's entertaining book, How to Survive History, particularly his description of the Chicxulub asteroid collision 65 million years ago. Quote, "It launched 25 trillion tons of the Yucatan Peninsula on ballistic trajectories, some at speeds that exceed our planet's escape velocity. But the majority of the debris returned back to Earth within the hour. These glass-like chunks, called tektites, some as large as school buses, but most the size of marbles, pelted the Earth at speeds ranging from 100 to 200 miles per hour. Their friction with the atmosphere collectively emitted enough thermal radiation to set fires across the world. Most of the world's trees burned," end quote. So apparently, that weather historian needs to learn some history about weather. Ah, and from the ongoing We Are All Going to Die file, this one to do with the surging oceans, Euronews.green says, quote, "Rising sea levels and climate change mean London's flood defenses are due for an upgrade," end quote. Boo! Rising sea levels and climate change, a double whammy. But here's the really scary part, quote, "Sea levels are projected to rise by around a meter by 2100, and storms are becoming increasingly intense due to climate change," end quote. And if you're wondering what I find so scary, it's that a would-be reputable news source would say storms are becoming increasingly intense due to climate change when, in the first place, storms are not becoming increasingly intense at all, so it's nonsensical to list reasons for it, and B, if storms were getting more intense, it wouldn't be because of climate change, it would be climate change, and C, sea levels are not projected to rise a meter by 2100, and D, if they did, we'd build dikes. Other than that, world ends. We are all going to sneer. In the newsletter, we also note that, between blasts of dogmatic climate alarmism, Scientific American emails us a piece asking, quote, "Can scientific thinking save the world?" end quote, wherein the secrets of the sophisticates are revealed. Quote, "What the experts say. Science should be an enabler of individual power, not a threat to your freedom," end quote, and quote, "The top three habits of mind for thinking like a scientist are 1, acknowledge uncertainties within your beliefs, 2, be curious and humble about what you don't know, 3, engage with others who hold different beliefs," end quote. Great. Now back to climate change, where we crush dissenters' tiny heads the same way we did over COVID. For instance, there's a site out there called Skeptical Science that is devoted to quashing any and all skepticism about the science, also known as climate alarmist orthodoxy. And of course, they've gone after Martin Durkin's recent film, Climate the Movie, which, to protect the elevated tone of debate, the folks at Skeptical Science call, quote, "this 80-minute-long festival of misinformation a veritable gish gallop of climate myths," end quote. In the process, they offer a quick rebuttal for those whose minds cannot or will not go beyond banal talking points, which is ironically itself a mishmash of error and gibberish and would have been better called glib naysaying. For instance, they purport to refute temp record is unreliable with, quote, "the warming trend is the same in rural and urban areas measured by thermometers and satellites," end quote, which is factually wrong. Then they rebut, CO2 was higher in the past with, quote, climate has changed along with CO2 levels through geological time, end quote, which concedes the point while disguising it with ambiguity. In fact, of course, climate has changed constantly, and so have CO2 levels, but there's no pattern of them changing together in consistent ways. Temperature and CO2, for instance, usually move independently, and on those occasions when they move together, temperature leads CO2, not the other way around. Oh, and in case you want to be rude and stupid, they offer the snappy comeback to polar bear numbers are increasing as being, quote, polar bears are in danger of extinction as well as many other species, end quote, which manages to be at once irrelevant and false. Now, this list will appeal to you if you're a troll or want to be one, but otherwise it won't. Because it's actually a guide to getting even more ignorant than you were to begin with if you came in knowing nothing. Because you will leave with your head stuffed with phrases that are misleading when not meaningless, useful for beating people over the head, and nothing else. On the other hand, returning to the real world and our fact check on climate the movie, Princeton's Will Happer says in the film, quote, it's true over the last few million years of the ice age that we're in now that CO2 and temperature are correlate, but if CO2 is the driver, it has to change first, and the temperature has to change second. Then Matthew Willicke says, quote, in fact, when you start to look at the data very specifically, you see the exact reverse. Temperature starts to rise first, and then on the order of a century, two centuries later, we start to see a rise in CO2, end quote. Is this correct? Yes, it is, as we've reported on previously. And now, in advance of the Northern Hemisphere forest fire season, let's clear our throats and our minds, and then practice reciting the ominous headlines that we know are coming. Climate-driven wildfires out of control globally. Scientists warn this year's wildfires only a taste of what's coming in a warming climate. As the planet burns, experts warn, time is running out to turn the crisis around. How did we do? With a bit more practice, we could probably get a job writing heads at the New York Times, in advance of the actual copy. But only if we're not asked to provide any evidence to back up the hype. Because the data show that on every continent, and for the world as a whole, wildfires are not getting worse, they're getting better. But what are mere facts when faced with the science? And on that point, from the co2science.org archive, we bring you a 2014 paper about the supposedly alarming increase in fire severity in the western United States, which found no such trend, at least in the Sierra Nevada and Southern Cascade Mountains in California. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and if you support Hamas, then you ain't no friend of mine.